This is RSBNB Update, episode 593, recorded Thursday, November 10th, 2016, Telegrabbing Hellfire. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. This is the RuneScape podcast that discusses practically every little tweak, fix, patch note that comes into RS among larger updates. This week, just myself and Mr. Bistro here.
Hello.
So this week brings us an update to prime the wheels for the upcoming Grandmaster quest. At least I assume it'll be Grandmaster level. Children of Ma, and they want everyone to be ready to do this quest, and that is the entire purpose of this week's update. So, do you... I assume you've done the original Fate of the Gods quest, yeah?
Yep.
Okay. So, this piece of content is to enable everyone to have the requirements for the quest when it comes out. Now, obviously, you need level 65 in agility, mining, or divination to get down here, and you add 800,000 XP onto that. And that kind of suggests, you know, low 70s, mid 70s requirements will be in store for Children of Ma in each of these skills. So that's precisely why they're doing this week. You know, I think there's lots of people out there who, when you think about it, would have loved something like this for the first Fate of the Gods quest. I'm trying to remember, is that the one where we had to collect all those divination memories before doing the quest?
Yep.
Okay. Because, you know, that was an adventure in itself, the fact you had to wait sometimes to...
I don't know, I enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was fine, but, I mean, some places it took longer to get the divination memory than it should have. It's not like, you know, you could get it done in an hour, you know? You had to spend a good deal amount of time getting these done.
Yeah, but I don't think everything in RS should have, like, instant satisfaction. I enjoyed having to wait longer in some areas. And that sounds kind of weird, but it's more rewarding that way.
Yeah, it is. And I totally agree with that. But it just felt really random for the first Fate of the God quest that you had to wait to get, you know, a random thing from doing divination at all the divination hotspots. So I'm in a way glad we don't have to do this for this quest. But this one that gives 800,000 XP in agility, mining, and divination, that itself is another question about whether something like that should be done. And I think that's where the nub of discussion will be on this episode of the podcast and how it pertains to getting everyone ready for the quest. So
now, is this 800K experience divvied out between all the skills? So once you hit 800K,
it's in each of. In
each of. That makes things a little bit worse.
Yeah, so it's effectively 2.4 million free XP AFK in some of the most tedious skills in game, depending on who you are. Agility, if you don't have access to Prif, is obviously very tedious. Mining, if you don't have access to the concentrated gold in the Living Rock Caverns of the Seren Stones, once again, tedious. I personally don't think divination is tedious, but I know people out there do think divination is tedious, just based on, you know, various preconceptions and whatnot. But divination is basically air fishing, right? You're fishing at a fishing spot and then you run a few steps to a bank.
I really appreciate divination. A new skill that isn't afraid to be a grindy one is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they struck the right balance with Divination. I would have personally made it a bit slower. As everyone probably knows, I'm a fan of the skilling rates that we had back in RS Classic, where it would take you years to reach 99 woodcutting. I wish we had stayed on that front and would have made those things a lot more accomplished, and we wouldn't have had to have resorted to things like true mastery, maxing, and comp. But that's a topic for another day. So basically, this place is at the dig site. You move to the eastern edge of the dig site, northeast edge of the dig site, and you'll notice there is a new cavern that you can enter. And in each of these caverns, you have the choice, or rather, it's one cavern, and then once you get down there, you have the choice of doing divination, agility, or mining. So, graphics-wise first, what do you make of what you see when you get down there?
Well, I'd say before you get down there, the entrance almost looks like a complete pull from the World Wakes quest, Guthix's chamber.
I kind of thought that they
put a different door on there.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention that because, I don't know, I thought how many different ways can you show off an excavation site, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
But getting down there, it's kind of bland. It's not the bland that you'd kind of see when you first went into the Virago tunnels, where the graphics were almost like alien looking, just how orange they were.
Right. I mean, you can definitely also tell that something is going to be happening in here. And you know, I think that it does show off NXT with just the depth and the fact that this is all one level and you don't need to change maps to get around with it. So that's pretty neat as well. So to do divination, the first thing you do, you'll notice basically a hopper of crystals and you choose from them. Then you transmute them into the active crystal, and that's indicated on your screen by there's a purple glowy effect under the appropriate color, so you just click transmute and then it'll transmute them without you needing to do anything else other than just clicking transmute into that color. You choose the color and off you go. You get 10 times the amount of XP if you're transmuting the correct one. You get 20 XP for transmuting the correct one and 2 XP for transmuting incorrect. And then for transmuting a full inventory of these crystals, which is 28, you get 554 XP for dumping it in the hopper. So,
it's a quick way
of divination XP that isn't divination training.
Yeah, it's kind of harking back to agility training by completing a course.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way of putting it. And there's some interesting animations along the way. You'll see the cart come back and load new stuff into the hopper. And then, this I think is by far the easiest one to do because you don't need to wait for an animation to move yourself and you don't need to run around to the other side of the room. If you're mining, for example, this one is only a few steps away from each of the bins. So I think Divination XP is the easiest to get here. But with that being said, they're all pretty easy. And that comes back to what we were saying. That, I mean, when in the world do we have, you know, 2.4 million free XP given out? So
yeah.
And, you know, I can see why they want to do that. If we are truly ramping up to one of the best quests and the most impactful quest ever to be released in the game in December, Sliske's Endgame, they want as many people, presumably, to be able to do this quest as possible. So getting the requirements out and, you know, helping people with these is definitely a good thing to do from Jagex's perspective and, you know, just advancing the lore in game. Because you'll remember to start this whole thing, you know, with the World Wakes, you didn't have to have any quest requirements, really. It would have helped, but you didn't have to. And subsequent quests really just built on the World Wakes. So this, in a way, is completing that entire experience for people who want to go out there and hunt it out. So, I personally see myself using the Divination XP the most because I already have 99 Divination, and I think that Divination is an interesting skill. And much like you, I was a fan of it when it first came out. I thought, okay, this is really neat. And they effectively created a new primary skill that didn't really have to draw with too much on fishing, mining, or wood cutting. So that was pretty good. Now, you want to talk about agility or mining next?
Let's go over the agility one.
All right.
It's with the invention looking.
Yeah, that's device. Precisely what I noticed. So you move down to the center of the throne room, and you'll notice a series of bicycles, let's say. But they're not really bicycles. They're cycles that you power in order to power the machine that – cycles that you pedal to power the machine that converts the ore that – players are mining. So once again, you have a little purple glowy effect. You jump on it and you just cycle it. You don't need to press any buttons here to change your speed like you did during the Halloween event. So free agility XP, basically 38.2 XP per tick, which is pretty astounding for agility. So if you're not a fan of agility and you don't have 99, lots of free XP down here that you should definitely be taking advantage of.
Especially for Skill of the Month.
Ah, it is Agility Skill of the Month. Thank you for reminding me about that.
I did not forget.
Yeah, very interesting to see this happening here. And, you know, I think that this one is probably the second easiest, but there is a bit of a delay in how long it takes your player to get off the cycle and move to the correct one. Because if you're not on the correct one, let's just say that your XP rate won't be that great. So you got to keep up with which cycle you're supposed to be on. And then they're called empowered if that's the right one.
Okay.
I can say, though, that I think that the skills chosen here do match up, unlike the Halloween event. So... I don't think there's anything else to say on the agility side of things. Fairly standard. You ready to move on to the next one?
Yes.
All right. So further up inside the throne room, there is a series of places that you can mine. Four pieces of ore. And once again, a specific ore will be empowered by having a glow around it. Very traditional mining XP here. And, you know, I honestly think that if you're looking for something to do that might be a bit of a change from the Saren Stones or whatnot, or you're, you know, below Prif level, this is, again, another great time to go out, because only place you can get this kind of AFK mining experience is concentrated coal or concentrated gold or Saren Stones. So,
which concentrated gold and concentrated coal can be quite a drag after a while.
There you go. Especially with the bank being so far away.
Yeah, I guess.
And these are 46.8 XP per ore.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, you can fill your inventory up really quick. You know, less than 2 minutes for a full inventory. You know, I forgot to bring my crystal pickaxe, and I have level 97 mining with a rune pickaxe. So it was, I mean, it wasn't optimal, but it was pretty quick. But the downside of this is that you need to run around to basically like a trapezoid of the room, four corners of a trapezoid. That's how far apart these are. So that's the most annoying part of this event. Anyways, I believe you were going to say something about this part.
Oh, no, go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. Well, after you collect your selection of ore, you basically need to go dump it in the machine. Your first instinct will be dump it in the minecart, but the minecart is purely visual, and you just need to put it in the machine. And then, once again, you know, just like depositing your crystals that you've transmuted up top, you get 540 XP for that as well. So... that's the core aspect of this. Before we move on to the rewards, aside from the experience, you know, there's been some suggestion about whether or not the XP should scale related to level, whether or not people should get more XP for being higher leveled or maybe less XP for being higher leveled, since, I mean, clearly these are designed for people in their 65s and early 70s for their experience to get them ready for the quest. So... you know, I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say that the XP rates for these are fine, and it doesn't need to necessarily scale based on that, because we have 2 weeks from the time this update was put into game till the time that the quest is released. So, I mean, anyone who truly wants to take advantage of this will be able to by the time the quest drops.
Yeah, I don't think it would need to be scaled either.
Yeah, I mean, you could scale the rate, perhaps maybe just a bit, like, you know, plus 10%, minus 10% based on your levels. I wouldn't go much beyond that. Like, scale the rate, not necessarily the total XP you can get, if that makes sense.
No, I don't think it should be scaled at all. I think it should be the same XP for everyone all around. This isn't combat.
All right, fair enough. It's also worth noting that bonus XP does work down here. So if you have bonus XP available, you can effectively transform that into 1.6 million XP per each of these skills, which, when you think about it, that's a lot. So,
yeah.
All right. So the question is, why would I do this if I already have, you know, level 99 everything? Why would I do this? Why would you do this? Why would Mr. Bistro go down here? Why would you?
For the relics, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. There are some things that you can receive from this, and that is four lore scrolls that can be brought back up to Celia Diggory, and she will give you copies of these books, and you can read through them. They're lore for preparing you for the upcoming quest. Do you want to comment on the name Celia Diggory?
No, I think I'll leave that to you.
All right. I know when I first mentioned that, I got that same chuckle from you, and we both know why. That is, of course, a Harry Potter reference. So, I mean, they gotta throw these kind of things in at some point, right?
No, I don't think it can be helped, because there's a new movie from that franchise coming out.
Oh,
or
really?
Is out. I don't remember. Yeah.
There's a new Harry Potter movie coming out.
Oh, it's not called Harry Potter, but it's Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I believe.
Oh, right. That's the Harry Potter for grown-ups, right?
No. It's just kind of a prequel thing.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't involve like any of the characters in it.
All right. See, when I saw that, I thought that was like Hogwarts or Harry Potter for grown-ups or something like that. But I guess that's not the case. Well, you learned something.
It's got that one Irish actor from Bruges, if you've ever seen that movie.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I don't know who you're talking about. Okay, note to self for not doing a podcast on music or movies going forward.
Okay.
I mean, unless you want to.
I don't know. I feel like I'd be carrying a lot of it.
Yeah, you would. You would. Anyways, the things that you can receive from this are the letter signed Pontifex Madramert, letter signed Pontifex Nabor, and letter signed Pontifex Bilrock, as well as a damaged dig site letter. Each of these expand out into multi-paragraph lore books, which, I mean, the lore hound in you, if you are one of those, will absolutely love to read these. For example, the third one from Bilrock is a description of Bilrock and Lucian leading the expansion into the Caridian Desert in search of Tutmakin, which we have heard about before. The second one, Nabor, is having a chat with the demon and asks what happened before he came into the care. So I'll let you guys read those out. But I think the first interesting one, the last one is the most interesting, and that is the damaged dig site letter. It basically is a report on the number and leadership of the legions at the time of the Lord's arrival in Kelinor, with that in the present. And it goes through all the legios all the way up to number 12 in the invasion, and then the present day number 20, and then it ends off right there. So, you know, some interesting stuff in here, specifically the ones who are destroyed and the ones who are still around. So it kind of is hinting at what things used to be like in the olden days when Zaros arrived. So this is going to be a very interesting quest from my perspective, especially just based on this last letter here. So anyone who has always had an interest in the Majorat or Zaros, this is something you want to do, if not just for the lore, or rather, if not for the XP, but just for the lore. So that's what I took out of it, and that's probably the best part of this update, in my opinion. So I'm not sure that there's anything else to mention on this, unless there's anything specific that you'd like to mention before we move on.
Not yet. I guess I gotta save other comments for when the quest actually comes out. And just kind of things I picked out from the November behind the scenes. So,
all right. So we don't get to hear any of that today.
Not today.
Anything that is going to relate to the throne room in particular that you can mention?
Well, they do show the throne room completely cleared out.
And by cleared out, you mean?
I mean, like, either flashback or just cleaned up. I don't know how else to say it.
All right.
But it looks pretty interesting in that case.
So by cleared out, you don't mean, like, absolutely destroyed or anything along the lines of that?
No.
Okay. All right. That's basically what I was wanting clarification on.
Okay.
So, I guess before we move on, there's just one other thing relating to this quest and the pregame show that Jagex released this week. Who do you want to come out on top in the upcoming Children of Maw quest is the current quick poll on the RS website. 59% say Zaros, 24% neither, and 17% Zamorak.
What? Oh. Why do people gotta be such haters?
Well, I mean, Zamorak is below neither, right? So, I mean, I could make a good election joke right here, right now, but we'll save that for.
No,
we'll save
too
that
too soon.
Too soon. Too soon.
Too soon. Give me like another like half an hour.
Okay. All right. So, I personally am wondering, is this foreshadowing anything?
I think it's foreshadowing nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
well, if neither is right in the middle, and they, but now I got myself thinking because they always included a stupid response in there. Neither would be that stupid response this time.
Oh. So, I honestly don't think Zaros is going to die in this quest because we saw concept art of him around in 2017. So I think the players are right on this front. Anyways, the second update of the week is the Celebration of Fire finale. This is something that Mod Mark alluded to when he introduced the Celebration of Fire. Basically, this is another seasonal type event that is on par with, you know, the restoration of Falador, the upgrading of Port Serum, getting ready for the heart in the desert. So from update time on Monday until November 21st, you can help this fallen Nihil that has appeared at the Lumbridge Crater near the bonfire by bringing it the Burning Embers. And you find these Burning Embers by doing various skilling activities throughout the world. And they say, note, you'll get higher drop rates if you have fire making 50, if you're training fire making or cooking. 50% for fire making, 20% more for cooking. You can also earn embers through daily challenges. And then when you complete this, you will earn a cosmetic outfit, a cosmetic Nihil dragon outfit, as can be seen in the news posting here, as well as some mystery boxes. So you can earn 1,000 embers a day. And then when you basically complete this, that's your end goal. And just like all the other ones previously, if you miss a day or you want to fast track your progress, you can purchase additional embers by using your loyalty points. So you know, not too much to see here, I don't think.
Good on them for making a use for loyalty points.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. And, I mean, this started out as a Treasure Hunter promotion. It's morphed into a game update. And like mm-hmm. we've alluded to before with Treasure Hunter, that's precisely what we like to see with Treasure Hunter updates. So all in all, a good run here by Jagex. It's also worth noting that Iron Man will be able to participate in this event and unlock the outfit, but won't be able to open the mystery boxes or convert excess embers into mystery boxes post-event. So, I'm not taking part in this one. I won't go out and absolutely hunt for the embers. I'll use what I get based on skilling. But, okay. I mean, it just doesn't feel as though it's as important to do as the Port Sarum event was. Mainly because it's not necessarily fully associated with an update. And, I mean, fire making and cooking, those really aren't two skills that I jump up and down about. So, anyways.
I guess in that respect, I'm not going to go out hunting for them either. I'm just basically going to let myself get them while fishing and do an agility.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, you get extra if you're doing fire making or cooking, which we're not doing.
Yeah.
So.
No.
All right. Well, on to the patch notes we go. And this week we have perhaps one of the hardest hitting patch notes that we've seen in a while. People are either very happy about this or upset about this first change this week, and that is that the cost of Livid Farm spells have been halved, and the difference has been refunded to those who have already unlocked them. So, what does this say about Livid Farm, which, as everyone out there knows, this is my absolute favorite piece of content. It's not. But
there will be less deaths related to Livid Farm in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, Livid Farm is one of those Questscape requirements. I mean, Master Questscape requirements that people just tear their hair out about. They wait until the double skilling event weekends to no life Livid Farm, and then, oh, there we go. We got Livid Farm done. But half is huge, and... You know, I can't help but noticing by doing this, I think they are saying that at this point, Livid Farm has become tedious with respect to the pace of play that people expect from the game. And as a result, they wanted to bring it in line to be less grindy, which I can totally get behind. And I think that, you know, this is something that needs to happen with content that isn't... cared for as much as the new content that comes into game. And the fact that Jagex goes back and looks at these things is really helpful for the health of the game. So I am happy about this. I personally still have no intention of going there to, you know, unlock these Livid Farm spells, because as the title suggested, Livid Farm really, for me, doesn't go in with the way I see farming. So...
Yeah, I might actually go back now. I know that there were some spells that I just didn't have the heart to go out and get. I know that I unlocked a couple of them just because I really, really wanted them.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've done some of them, you get basically half the points back, right? You get the difference back. Mm-hmm. So you might be able to put that towards new stuff. Who knows?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be people out there who are almost done, and then, oh, I log in, and, you know, we're able to finish this. So, lots of happy people, but you can't recoup time. And you can't recoup time that's spent doing something tedious. So I can see why there are some people that are going to be upset about this. But anyways, that's patch note number one. Patch note number two, the small rune pouch, that's the pouch that you can use that'll store your runes to minimize inventory space, will now protect on death and drop its content to the opponent upon dying in a PvP situation. All right, that's good.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, once upon a time, I don't know if this is still the case, runes were always protected. Runes and GP were always protected in the wilderness, weren't they? Or no, they weren't.
Yeah. Well, I think GP might have been protected for a little bit.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about the general death options. GP and runes are always protected on death in the real world, but when you head out to the wilderness, they're not. So I guess this makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. A planter section has been added to the Arc Journal, which, when seeds are planted in the Twilight Academy, displays their current status so you can know when to head back to check your berries, which is excellent for those budding berry breeders out there, just like those of you guys who breed Pokemon. I mean, that's the most common linkage I can find here. Breeding berries is like breeding Pokemon. So.
Okay.
An unlimited teleport to the Quartermaster in Port Sarum has been added to the Arc Journal, so you can use your Arc Journal to now teleport to Port Sarum to get to your Arc faster rather than using the Port Sarum Lodestone, which I think is great. Another suggestion for me on this, just to improve accessibility and, you know, not put too much emphasis on the Priftinus not requirement, but dependency many players have these days would to be to add a right-click option to the port portal to teleport to outside your port portal in Port Sarum, because that would help too, I think. So that's just something that I was thinking of when trying to get to the Ark on my own. You think that'd be a good thing to do?
Sure. I suppose... I really never had anything to complain about before, but
did you lodestone there? Or?
Oh yeah, I'm just so used to lodestoning, so to Port Sarum.
All right. The Arc Teleport Journal can now also provide access to any Arc Teletabs previously purchased without needing to carry the Teletab in the backpack. This feature is purchased from the Wyco Reward Shop for 1,000 chimes. This is an unlock. This unlock is a completionist cape requirement. Okay. How do you feel about that?
Well, I guess one more requirement wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
I don't have my completionist cape, so I'm not too sad right now.
And plus 1,000 chimes isn't exactly that much, so it's not like we're being asked to move a mountain or something along the lines of that.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. Players can no longer hide from the malignant entity on Goshima by opening an interface. I wonder who figured that one out.
It's like bringing up the Pip-Boy in Fallout just pauses the entire world.
Yeah. Because, you know, that malignant entity hits pretty hard. I mean, if you're not careful, it can really drain your hit points quickly. 10% per tick, so 990 if you're level 99, and I mean, you disappear really quick in that regard. You also lose your prayer points as well. So, good they caught this one. The Herb Burner, which is, of course, a reward from the Halloween events, is now reclaimable from Diego at no cost. The activation chance of Raid's armor has been halved in PvP combat. So, enlighten us. For those of us who do not have Raid's armor, what is the chance effect of this armor?
I don't know. I'd have to look at them because I don't have a set of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I stick with my port stuff because I'm not going to waste all of that money.
Yeah, so you even use port stuff for your
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like for doing raids in Telos, you use port stuff?
Yes, yes, yes.
Interesting.
No reason not to.
Yeah, that's the thing I had always assumed with armor is that, okay, so you can get level 85 tank armor, or you can get level 90 power armor to get a little teensy bit more damage out of it. And I always wondered why, you know, the diehard PVMers were so enthused with you know, the power armor.
It's the less people... that can do a boss means more reward in the end, but I just don't run into a situation where I'm trying to duo stuff or four mana raid or three mana raid. I don't think you can three mana raid, but You get what I mean. Like, if you're
so
going
they basically
to,
want to maximize the amount of damage they put out, so they can have more reward.
If you're gonna solo next, you can consider using that armor. I probably still wouldn't, because I honestly don't know if the drops would make up for the charge.
All right,
for Malevolent.
The Tempest equipment from raids has the ability to reset all defensive ability cooldowns, which is pretty huge when you think about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is this ability here. So defensive abilities, you need to be wearing three pieces of this, and you can see why that's that would be pretty big for PvP, right? I mean,
yeah. I think that a lot of the stuff in PvP should probably be halved. I don't think it should just be this super high-end stuff, because it will slow down the pace of the PvP and allow people to actually have time to think a little bit more.
Yeah, and see, you know, there were lots of other PvP things in here that I didn't mention in the patch notes, but we might as well go through these now that you mentioned it, because that's exactly what these patch notes are. The diminishing returns drop-off for stuns in PvP combat has been lowered to 7.2 seconds. Reflect will now reflect 25% of damage received back at the attacker in PvP combat. Goliath gloves and spellcaster gloves no longer interrupt PvP combat.
Interesting. Okay, keep going.
Okay, why is that interesting?
Interrupting combat, isn't that just a way of grabbing a PK from someone?
That's right. And that would be why they would have fixed that. I'm not precisely sure what the ability on that was, but the fact that they no longer interrupt combat, that I think you hit the nail on the head of why that would be the case. So let's see. Goliath gloves are a pair of level 80 melee tank gloves that can be obtained in the Dominion Tower. Let's see. What else do they do? When you wear them, each auto or basic attack ability has a 5% chance of dealing 25% more damage, binding the target and lowering its attack strength, ranged defense by 7 levels.
Oh.
All right. So I guess the interrupting in PvP would have come from this thing triggering, and it would have broke the combat cycle, allowing someone else to perhaps swoop in and enable them to steal a kill. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, like, you almost have to wonder, like,
are we ready for combat? Bounty Hunter?
Well, how is their combat put together where combat can be broken by items? Like, should that just be something that doesn't get broken?
Yeah, and you got to remember, we're having the Bounty Hunter release on Monday, so.
Yeah. I think it's ready. I think it's as ready as it will ever be.
Yeah.
And seeing some of these, they're going to find more. But this is promising so far.
Yeah. Should we have gone to a beta server for Bounty Hunter?
I would have appreciated that. Yeah. But I think it would have diminished some of the fun of day one release.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because I'm gonna be out for blood,
and we know what happened last time they put out a combat beta. So let's see. I believe that was the last of the PvP fixes in this patch note here. So we'll leave it at that. Also, information on the reflect tooltip has been improved. So focusing in around the reflectability and defensive abilities in PvP. Following from that, a bank pin check has been added to the wilderness sword teleport, so you can't just teleport into the wilderness without entering a bank pin. I guess that's in case people do get hacked at some point, so I guess we can thank them for that. I don't want anyone to go into the wilderness with my Black Santa hat. That'd be pretty bad. Players can no longer damage Slayer monsters outside of their Slayer level with certain abilities. You remember when Slayer first came out, we had a similar patch note like this with Rings of Recoil for Abyssal Demons, Aberrant Spectres, and whatnot?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't remember the release of Slayer. Oh. I was a non-member around then.
All right. Well, basically the same kind of thing happened back then, is you were able to use the Ring of Recoil, and then that would do damage to Slayer creatures if you were outside their level.
Okay.
Yeah. Though I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, I can see why they don't want this happening, but I wonder where this would have came from. So, anyways. And finally, Benedict Encumberyak has set up a more permanent residence by the gate at the South Varrock entrance. And of course, Benedict Encumberyak is the Benedict World Tour Fellow that encourages everyone to use the NXT client and gives them some rewards for doing so and going around to see the sights. Also on relocations from Berthorpe, Balthazar has left, returning to the circus. You'll remember Balthazar was in Berthorpe from the summer raffle.
So he'd just been spending his summer vacationing in Berthorpe.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Anyways, I believe that's it for the patch notes, unless there's anything else that you'd like to throw in.
A bunch of Hellfire hotfixes. I like looking at the hotfixes because it's either like Jay shit their pants, oh no, something's on fire moments, or just other small stuff that they thought they could get in.
Players can no longer keepsake the Hellfire bow. Players no longer appear to have the Hellfire bow equipped upon exiting the wilderness. Players can no longer telegrab the Hellfire bow. Players can no longer grab the Hellfire bow by standing on the edge of the wilderness while bound and reach over the wilderness boundary to pick it up. What? What? That's got to be the most
commitment.
That's got to be the most absurd one here.
There, that is commitment to find a bug that way. Wow.
Huh. How did I miss this coming into game last week?
The Hellfire bow?
Yeah. Apparently it was released October 31st.
Hmm.
Huh. Uh-huh. Someone here has, I mean, it wasn't in the news posting, so that might explain something about it. Apparently, the Hellfire Bow is a powerful bow that players can wield at level 90 ranged. One Hellfire Bow per world appears somewhere in the wilderness on the ground, visible to all players with a large golden beam on top of it. Okay.
That's
so
cool.
This is a level 90 bow. It's not tradable. This wasn't in the Halloween update or the patch update. I mean, like, there was nothing in the news posting about this. Let me pull up last week's patch notes. And I mean, I'm pretty sure this wasn't in the patch notes.
Huh.
Yeah, it wasn't in the patch notes either last week. Huh.
It's pretty cool looking.
All right. That is a real stumper.
It's huge, too. I have not seen anyone walking around with one of these.
Like, it's a freaking level 90 ranged bow.
This was originally added with the Wilderness Tasks update.
Okay. But?
This was changed when it entered the game on Halloween and was made obtainable.
Hmm. And I wonder, can we take it out of the wilderness? Oh, it cannot be taken out of the wilderness and cannot be keepsaked. Okay. Hmm. This is very peculiar. All right.
I think it'll be really cool to use for Bounty Hunter.
And now you can see why they didn't want people keepsaking it or telegrabbing it. Yeah, and that's why they had the dedication behind it.
the telegrabbing it. Who even tries to telegrab anything anymore these days?
Well, when it's rare, you do. I mean, I remember one of my early ways of gaining GP was to telegrab the GP from the demon up in the Wizard's Tower.
Or down in the bank underneath Vara or West Varrock.
Yeah, that works too. There was also telegrabbing the wine from the Zamorak people by Taverly.
So I think that's still what some...
Yeah, it's still
possible. That's there's a wilderness one that people do that.
Yeah. I think there's a resource dungeon too for that.
Hmm. Well, now we know.
Yeah. Let's see.
I still can't get over that.
When in the wilderness...
Players can no longer grab it when standing on the edge of the wilderness while bound. Reach over the wilderness boundary to pick it up. That's... So many things have to happen.
And there wasn't anything on the wilderness task set posting either about that news posting about the Hellfire Bow. Very interesting.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, I'm wondering out there, listeners, have you guys heard of anything like this before, the Hellfire Bow? Or is this just me, you know, not spending enough time in the wilderness or on Jagex's streams missing this? Because, I mean, I have them on Twitter. I follow all the official sources for these updates, the postings and whatnot. But this is the first I've ever heard of this bow.
Yeah, I have to say, I haven't heard of it either.
Oh. And you know, the really unfortunate thing about this bow, it can't be used in deathmatch, because to get into deathmatch, you don't go into the wilderness. But being in the PvP sense, I can see precisely why this would be a very interesting thing to have. So,
it's really fast, too.
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, you learn something new every day. That's going to be the motto of this podcast. Anyways, before we move on to the questions for this week, I do have some Treasure Hunter news about Smoldering Lamps.
Those are back.
Yep, from the 10th to the 14th. You'll remember that last time we had these, someone effectively maxed out an account in an entire weekend. These are indeed the lamps that everyone hates because they use your bonus XP. In addition to giving you XP. So, I mean,
I don't mind them that much. But that's because I don't go out and buy them.
Yeah, that's true. So. I mean, you could spend a lot on bonds and, you know, real world rune coins if you wanted to. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I saw a promotion when I logged in today that there is double rune coins on some of the larger rune coin baskets. So, you know, they are really pushing the rune coins at this point.
Apparently they're going to be having a Black Friday sale on a bunch of their store stuff.
All right.
This year.
Yeah, they are.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, they are free to do that, so that's good. I guess since we've already talked about the Children of Maw and the Empty Throne Room, we know Bounty Hunter's coming next week. That pretty much sums up the month of November on RuneScape. But there was one other thing that you did mention briefly here, and it was alluded to in the behind the scenes video, and that is that this month, at the end of the month, Premier Club will be coming out again, and it will be having more value to it, more perceived value, and it is going to be cheaper than it was last year. And I think that's something that people are going to be excited about.
Yeah. Thank God.
Because, you know, I found there's no benefit to me to get Premier Club 14, 15, or 16. As I've mentioned previously, the only Premier Club I got was in 2013. Aside from that, there's just no point, because if you're grandfathered in on the $5 a month plan, why?
Mm-hmm.
If you want something from the Solo Maw's General Store, just spend a little bit on rune coins. And with that, you can even spend that money from your game stash on rune coins by using bonds. Anyways, anything else, RS, before we move on to our question of the week?
Let's do the questions.
All right, so we just got one this week. Well, I think two or three based on how it reads, but this is from Trekkie. If you were in charge of creating a new type of minigame that is used for all combat and skill levels, what kind of minigame would you have in mind? A payload-style map? Some form of FPS with arrows at distance targets? And what rewards would you give? You know, I think this is interesting because if you look at the current state of the minigames in RS, everything revolves around what is currently on Spotlight and which one is going to give you the best Thaler XP, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how do you bring in a new minigame to RS that is going to be as successful as Castle Wars was in its heyday, or Pest Control, or Soul Wars, or Fishing Trawler, or Stealing Creation for that matter? I think that it has to be some kind of combat-related game. I think that's definitely a must. I'm going to say this again, and I'm going to outline what I view would be the most ideal, and you can tell me if you agree with me or not. So what I would personally do is I would remove mobilizing armies from the game and then bring out a new enhanced version of mobilizing armies that is effectively a RuneScape MOBA within RuneScape. So you would have something like Heroes of the Storm or League of Legends, and you would use the RS combat system with certain heroes that you might find in the game, and it would be your player's way of interacting with the game world, knowing what your player knows. Think of it as a kind of a Dominion Tower, except focused on a third-person experience of the heroes that you've already met. So let's just say, for example, I'm just going to pick a random hero, someone that we know from game.
Sir Owen.
All right. So you can play as Sir Owen as one of your heroes, and then he'll have a set of combat traits and abilities and a set of the in-game evolution and combat abilities and maybe one or two special abilities that you can use. And then what you can do is you can team up with some friends, maybe, or go up against those friends, and then with that, use the evolution and combat system controlling Sir Owen, and then effectively have what is going to be a MOBA-like experience. And I think that if you were to do something like that, it would, in effect, replace what mobilizing armies was, kind of the RTS strategy game, and replace it with what I think is one of the most common played genres of games out there. I think that Dota, League of Legends, Heroes of the Storm are pretty common, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that it should be something that resides within RuneScape, though. I think that would just kind of break the total possibility for a player base.
All right.
I think that would be really successful, probably more so than
as another game, right? But The reason I say it should be a part of RS is because up to this point, we really haven't had, you know, a huge hit for the new combat system that really lets it shine. I mean, sure, you have all these bosses and whatnot, but, I mean, if you look at the core design of what was going to be the evolution of combat before it received all the updates that made it more RuneScape-ish that the players demanded, it looked a lot like one of these MOBA combat systems. And if you had removed the tick rate from the game, or at least increased it substantially, you would have effectively had MOBA-style combat in RuneScape. At least that's my hypothesis. And that's why I think one of these updates to the game would be so great to have. And, I mean, you're entirely right. You could do this as a secondary game, but why not put it in RS and let you show off the combat system? So that's what I would do. Failing that, I would just rework mobilizing armies to make it more modern and make it something that players would love to come and see.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
My answer won't be as long-winded, but it's very meaningful. I don't think that RS needs any more minigames. In fact, they have way too many to begin with. But if I was to make another one, it would be a love child of Pest Control and Stealing Creation.
All right. You have any ideas of or rather ideas of your own. Do you have any existing games out there in the world that you could draw inspiration from?
Not really. I guess Bounty Hunter, even though it's not a mini game, would be something I would draw inspiration from.
That's fair.
You know, like,
that's fair.
It's the one-on-one hunting someone down, that kind of stuff. I know that Watch Dogs 2 is really going to be doing that with their game coming out soon, Ubisoft.
All right. What about another thing that was removed this year? What about reintroducing rat pits?
No. Just no.
I mean, that was a very interesting quest, nonetheless, the rat catcher's quest. But the mini game aside from it, I don't think anyone went back to it. So. I wonder what mini game would be removed next. What?
Fist of Gothics?
No. What minigame was I talking about? Mobilizing armies. I can't believe I forgot that. Wow. All right. So in that case...
Oh, there's some Tezhar ones that could probably get removed. They're just empty all the time.
Yeah. And see,
fight
that's...
Fight pits, I think.
That's right. And fight pits is effectively deathmatch. Like... And, you know, this is what I said coming into this question. It is effectively, I'm sorry. I just saw something in my email, an ad that, I mean, oh, why Google? Why do you have an...
Oh, that's not the kind of email I thought you got.
No. What'd you think I got?
I'm not going to say.
All right. But, I mean, I said with the huge impact on Thaler and whatnot, that everything is relying on that. And like you said, you have the Tzar fight pits down there. And then I point out that deathmatch is practically fight pits. I mean, you're right. We have too many mini games here already. Perhaps we should just fix the ones that we have.
Fix and remove some. I need to emphasize that. That's my stance. Because, sure, you know, like, they might have updated pest control, but no one's going to pest control still. Like, it's not updated to where it needs to be. And I think it would be if the rewards were a little bit better and the combat was much higher, because just no one is at that level for the high level ship or island.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the problem with so many games here, and the fact that it needs to be on Spotlight. It's like, how do you create enough diversity among these mini games to ensure that they're going to, you know, each have a spot in the game before adding more? Or, I mean, what's the overlap between Deathmatch and fight pits? I really want to answer that question now that you brought up fight pits, because I didn't mention fight pits at once during the episode when we were talking about deathmatch, if I recall. So, I mean, how does that fit together in your view?
I just don't know.
Yeah.
I wish I could have something good to put here, but things are so spread out. There's so many of them that even if maybe some of them aren't broken, no one knows, because they're broken because they just don't have players. They're broken in that way.
Hmm. Yeah, it's very concerning. And I mean, we saw an uptick in minigames when Thaler came out, but we might be back to that position. Definitely something to keep in mind going forward. And seeing where the community goes with PvP. Anyways, thank you, Trekkie. If you want to send us in questions, you can call or text to 571-57-BNB. That's 571-572-2632. Or you can email questions at rsbnb.com. And we also have the Twitter where you can at message us or direct message us at rsbnb.
Thank you, Tricky.
Yep. All right. So, tech news. You know, after Tuesday, after the U.S. election, there was a swath of stories online, and I think this is something that we need to talk about. The headline is, Facebook admits it must do more to stop the spread of misinformation on its platform. Now, I am a proponent of having Facebook, Twitter, you name it, not have any kind of filtering at all about whether you post something, and then, like, let's say I post something and it's clearly misinformation. I should be able to post that and let people that follow me see that. There shouldn't be some kind of filter that's designed by a Facebook newsfeed algorithm that, you know, will lower the presence of something that someone posts, even if they have, you know, tens of thousands of followers. That doesn't make sense in my view. So the article goes on to say that Facebook has responded to widespread criticism of how its newsfeed algorithm disseminates and amplifies information in the wake of the Trump victory in the U.S. presidential election yesterday. Multiple commentators were quick to point a finger, but blame at Facebook's role in the election campaign, arguing that the tech giant has been hugely irresponsible given the role its platform now plays as a major media source, specifically by enabling bogus stories to proliferate, and many examples were seen circulated on Facebook newsfeed during the campaign. Then it goes on to mention that, I don't know if I believe this number, you tell me if you believe it, that apparently 40% of adults in the U.S. get their news from Facebook.
Depends on what the range for adult is.
I'd say probably, you know, the core range, 18 to 34, and then it would also include the 35 to 55 range as well, if I had to guess.
I think it would be much heavier on the younger side. The older side, I could see them getting most of their news from television.
Yeah. And then when you expand that out, apparently, the Pew Research Center found that a majority of U.S. adults, 62%, now get news via social media. And while Facebook is not this only platform, nor the only where fake news can spread, see also Twitter, it's far more dominant on the platform in the U.S. and in many other markets. So this is going to be a question going forward, and it worries me that we're going to start seeing a crackdown by these social sites on trying to, in effect, become editors of what people are posting, which, I mean, I don't agree with. That isn't something that the internet was initially designed for. And I think there's a proven history that open platforms on the internet far out-succeed the platforms that are closed. So, I mean, that is something that if Twitter embraced it, I think they would be in an opposite position of where they are now. And while Mark Zuckerberg claims to be open, it's, you know, any wonder what the employees at Facebook will do. So, I mean, I think we are definitely entering a gray area for what I'm prepared to now call big social. That is, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and so on. So, I don't know. It's just worrying. So,
yeah, but I think it's also worth saying that any news outlet can be just as biased.
Yep.
You mentioned in your pick last week that there's a lot of things that don't get talked about, and this is just a perfect instance of that.
Yeah, and I mean, you are employing an algorithm to filter certain things out because it doesn't necessarily have, you know, the backing of multiple sources, then you end up in a case where the video I talked about last week and, you know, some of the things that happened in my pick of the week, the Truth movie last week, could have ultimately have been buried by Facebook. So, I mean, it's a golden rule in classical journalism going back, you know, before the TV and before the internet, is that before you run with a story, you have two independent sources on something in order to ensure it's correct, which has gone out the window. And I mean, if the sources that Facebook is going to check with their algorithms aren't, you know, let's just say, aren't vetted themselves, then we could end up with problems here. So, very concerning. Very concerning. I'm not sure how I feel about these platforms going forward.
I think only time will tell.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a solution to it. I'm not going to say it right now because it's not, doesn't exist yet, but we'll see. All right. So just keep your eyes open if you're on any of these platforms for things that are fake and whatnot. It's also worth noting that next year, Google will be labeling stories on their Google News search engine as potentially incorrect. So they're going to be doing fact-checking too. So.
Oh, well, they better if they do so much policing of everything else already.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said last week, I'm starting to get a little bit annoyed with Google, and I mentioned one of my emails I was complaining about earlier, and I guess I'll say it. I just have the email tab open here, and I see an ad. I don't know how this could have existed. I get an ad in Google for supplydating.com. Fed up with fake dating? Try this. You'll be surprised.
So I wasn't that far off.
Oh, no, I assume you thought it was going to be something...
something pretty raunchy.
Yeah, like the treasure trail thing we had in that one update last year. Anyway. Anyways, on to another piece of tech news. We're not making fun of the Note 7 this week, because you guys didn't bring it up and they're not in the news anymore.
Well, you know, you already mentioned it, so...
I mentioned it, but we're not going to make fun of
Note 7. Note 7.
Apparently, some Google Pixel phones are having problems with LTE Band 4 connections. And, you know, I'm not going to throw a wrench at Google, or I believe it was HTC who made this phone, yeah?
No, this is, well, this is Google's first phone.
Yeah, but who manufactured it for them? I think it was HTC. Not 100% sure, but, you know, these kind of things happen from time to time. You remember the whole issue with the iPhone 4?
Mm-hmm.
With, you hold it, you say, oh, yeah, you're holding it wrong.
The antenna.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is an easy thing to fix. You just change the outside case a little bit, maybe up the gain on some of the transmitters or position them differently, and you're off to the races. So that'll be something that they can easily fix in new units coming out. And plus, it's LTE Band 4, which is something that I don't think it's not something that is outright going to cause problems, because it's, you can go down to another band of LTE or, you know, down to something else if that's also failing you as well. So there's really not too much to worry about with this. But if you are having problems with this, I guess the correct course of action here would be to take it back to your outlet where you purchased it. So,
yeah. One of my friends, he got a Pixel on Wednesday, and he's loving it for the 24 hours or so he's had it. he hasn't noticed any problems yet.
Yeah, and you know, another thing with, since it's LTE Band 4, is that it could entirely relate to the carrier you're on, because all the carriers use different frequencies. So some frequencies might work better than others. So that could also be relating to this, but nonetheless, nothing to worry about. But if you are having problems with it, this is likely the cause. All right. And our last piece of tech news deals with the Wii U. We talked about the Nintendo Switch a while back, but it appears as though the Wii U has ended production.
That's good.
Yeah, and you know, the Switch isn't due to come out until next year. So,
yeah, but they're just burning money. They've been burning money for years.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate to always see what's happening with Nintendo. And, you know, some of the cases that you see with this, it's I don't know if you remember this in the late 90s, but this is so eerily reminiscent of what happened with Dreamcast, the Sega Dreamcast. Do you remember that console?
Yeah, I remember all the talk about it. I was a little bit young to completely.
Yeah, basically they stopped making Dreamcast consoles, but the games were still out, and no one could purchase consoles that were there. So my only concern with the Wii U announcement is that there will be people out there who want to purchase a Wii U or a new Nintendo console, but they won't be able to, because I don't think the Switch is due out until, I think it was March next year, I believe? Either summer or March. But that's a long time. And apparently stock for the current Wii U, especially in the North American market, is only supposed to last up for the current quarter. So that could pose a problem for anyone out there. But I guess if you want to purchase a Wii U, now would be the time to do that. If you absolutely need one, if not, wait for the Switch. So, you know, it just doesn't smell right for Nintendo, if you get where I'm going with that.
Yeah. I honestly don't know what to think about it anymore. I got a funny meme image from it prints money. I have to share it.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes, but
there. Or opposite for Wii U.
Oh boy.
It shreds money.
Oh boy. Let's see this. Well, then you can see the tear on it as well. Anyways, on to happier things with a Skill of the Month update for November. So, the Agility Skill of the Month, as we mentioned, good chance to get some XP if you haven't already in the Children of Ma pre-event, the Forgotten Tavern. I mean, the Forgotten Throne Room. I don't know why I call it a tavern. But in this Agility Skill of the Month, Parnassus is in first place with 3.4 million experience gained. Second place is Small Fib with just over 2 million XP gained. And at third, we have Carpi with 182,000 XP gained. Oh, you're in fourth now. Congratulations.
Yay.
You should definitely get down to that throne room. And,
I should.
And get some
it
free XP.
It might give me a fighting chance.
Yeah, it very well might. And, I mean, it's free XP for that. Though you might be better off served in Prif, I guess, maybe.
Well, that's what I was using before, but the thing about Prif is that you just have to keep going, because you finish one round and your velocity is three quarters of the way
right.
full, and you just have to use it, otherwise you'll feel guilty.
That's right. It's like, one more round, one more round, one more round, one more round, and that's just the way it keeps going. But a third of the way through the month, and it looks like we have a two-way race going here. It'd be interesting to see if anyone else shoots up through the rest of the month. All right. We do have some achievements of the week this week. A good number of them. Would you like to go through them?
Yeah. Okay. First, we have Boredom with 120 defense on November the 9th.
Good job.
And, yeah. Then we have Extort with 99 thieving on November 6th. Congrats to you. And then Touchpad Pro got 120 invention on November 3rd.
Congratulations, everyone. Nice achievements. Two 120s, 120 defense, 99 thieving. Very nice. Look forward to seeing more of them in the coming weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And just a reminder to everybody out there, if you want to have your achievements tracked, 120s, 99s, 120s virtual or real, just register on the RSBNB forums and fill out the user profile field for your RS name, and you'll start being tracked after 1 week. And that's how that works. Mm-hmm. All right. So I believe you have a pick of the week for us now.
I do, and it's a mobile game called City 2048. This is a puzzle game that is just ungodly addicting.
Is this related to the game 2048?
It is, and I'll explain what 2048 is to everyone in a little bit. But what City 2048 is, it's like a graphic skin over the game 2048. Which is where you're combining tiles to duplicate the number for higher points. And then you just keep doing that until you get the highest score you can. And the game is, or the goal of the game is to just keep beating your high score, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's enough. So I have probably put a good 10, 12 hours into this game.
Oh boy.
And I got it on Tuesday. So yeah, it's really nice because you can take your time with each move. There's no timer on this game.
You're
moving tiles around on a 4x4 grid. So you'd be combining twos with twos, fours with fours. But this is represented increasingly urban looking buildings in this game. So yeah, I highly recommend.
Looks like we're available on iOS as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, there's something about the initial 2048 that really pissed me off.
What's that?
2048 was a game that was essentially a copy of another game that's called Threes. The initial game was on iOS. The developer of Threes put a substantial amount of money into game design, sound assets, and graphics for his game called Threes that he sold for $4.99 on the iOS App Store. And then comes 2048, and you get these free clones that are just ripping off this game design and giving zero credit at all to the initial designer who designed Threes. And, I mean, like, at least include something that you were inspired by Threes and whatnot. And, I mean, it just really irks me that 2048 has become more popular than Threes after the guy who built Threes put a substantial amount of his own money into investing in game design, and then someone just rips it off. That seems like that's the standard thing of the open source community.
Well, yeah, but you see that with everything. A coworker of mine has a friend who built a game for the iOS. It's called Catch, and it's just grabbing a ball through progressively more difficult levels, and there's a delay on catching that ball. And as levels go by faster, and like spiky balls come in there, if you grab them, you lose. There's timers and all that stuff. And it never took off, but now you see just tons of games that do things just like that.
Yeah. And, you know, it speaks to a larger issue as well, that when the App Store came out, you know, someone could, an independent individual could reasonably, you know, come up with a game design and whatnot and put it on one of these App Stores and, you know, have a chance and hope at success. But that doesn't really seem the case these days unless you're, you know, a funded game publisher or you got substantial investment behind your product. And, you know, it also goes to show that the iOS App Store is at least filled with some spam game apps from China, which, you know, that's even more annoying. I'm not sure how the Android App Store is.
I think it's equally as bad.
Yeah. So.
Shane was underselling this quite a bit, but I really, really recommend it still.
Yeah. And, I mean... I do have to say that at least City 2048 is putting a new spin on this game, whereas 2048 itself is just, you know, an old copy. So I will give you that with City 2048, it actually adds a different element to the game. So, So I mean, I'm not as upset about City 2048 as I am the other ones that are available. So, anyways, I believe we can talk about what we've been doing now. For some reason, the YouTube playback of that app won't play. But what have you been up to this week on RS?
Agility. I've been meaning to go down this week to the new area, prep myself, and get some of that good XP. I haven't yet, though. Just agility and fishing. I'm going to be giving myself a 97 invention still tonight. So.
Oh, good. Will you be getting 99 by next week's show?
Not if I'm down in the dig site area.
Yeah, that's true. All right, fair enough. All right, well, that's good you have some... that's good you're working on agility. As for me this week, I wasn't feeling too well in the early days of the week, so I didn't really get much else done on RS. You know, did I mention that last week I found my last Miller potion recipe, so I found them all now?
I think you did.
All right. Wasn't sure if I mentioned that last week, because I looked at my note sheet after we finished recording and was like, oh, did I mention that? I'm not sure if I mentioned that, because it wasn't on there. But, all right, so that's good I mentioned that.
Yeah, you said that because you said you got a Dungeoneering level.
Right. Yeah, you enjoyed like that. You enjoyed that, didn't you?
Yeah, you're still coming down to a dungeon with me, and you will learn the ways.
All right.
Just wait, everyone. Shane's mind will be changed by the end of this year.
But, you know, in addition to that, I did find an ideal island from a scroll. I found one with two divination spots, two golden salt, and some mushrooms on it. It also had driftwood and regular bamboo. So I think that's pretty much an ideal island when you think about things that you would want from an arc island. I mean, you definitely want the golden salt and the divination for transmutation. So I'm glad I found that. And I didn't have to spend supplies on getting that, believe it or not, because it came from an Uncharted Island scroll. So that was fun. Though... I'm a bit leery to go back because I don't want to get 99 mining. I want to wait until the mining and smithing rework comes out for that. So I'm a bit leery to do mining, which, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that I've pigeonholed myself into this position, but I really want to be able to, you know, feel what it's like to enjoy that skill with levels still to gain. So, but aside from that, not much else this week on RS for me, so I believe we can call it a show, unless there's anything else you'd like to talk about.
Note 7. I'm good.
All right, fair enough. Well, then, with that being said, for Mr. Bistro and Shane, we will see you guys next week for the release of Bounty Hunter. Should be very, very interesting.
Dun, dun, dun.
And once again, have a great weekend, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye.